Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I f***ing love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy on call. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
I can't believe
there are a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
One minute before noon Eastern Standard Time. It is Thursday, November 2nd. The year is 2023. Good to have you with us. Episode 446 of the Anik and Florian podcast, presented by DraftKings, live on the DraftKings Network, DraftKings YouTube channel, clips on the Anik and Florian podcast YouTube channel as well. And as promised, we are joined by a man who has just had an exceedingly busy and successful 2023. This man also procreates, has children, beautiful family as well. But the great Eric Nixick on Instagram and X, Eric underscore XC. MMA, my man, welcome home. Congratulations on a successful venture. What a whirlwind your life must be right now. It probably feels good to be back in Vegas.
Yeah, thanks, brother. No, it was good to get home, good to make it home before Halloween, see the family, see the kids and everybody. But yeah, man, it's been I don't even know what town I'm in right now, what time zone I'm in.
Yeah,
but it's been good, man. Nothing but celebration.
So, well, if it makes you feel any better, I know you're always on top of everything, screws tightened. So you reached out to me 24 hours prior and were like, dude, where's the link to the show? And I was like, we're actually going Thursday instead of Wednesday. Hope you're still available. But it makes you feel any better. Every morning I back our car out of the garage for my wife. And this morning I, in my haste, did not wait for the garage door to go up all the way. So I did not go to Saudi Arabia, but I did absolutely shatter the rearview mirror on my Audi.
Oh, man.
You're doing better than I am. So I guess I just want to start with your overall experience. At this point, you've been asked every question, albeit not from Kenflo, but I just was curious about your overall experience in Saudi Arabia, accommodations, treatment, hospitality for you, Francis, and everybody else.
World-class, John. Absolutely world-class. Like, you know, they flew us business class, you know, which is huge, obviously, on those long treks, those long flights. The hotel itself was five-star, top-notch. We all had our own, basically our own luxury apartment, kitchen included. All the food was included. We had a security team. We had cars. If we wanted to go anywhere, we just texted the security team. They set it up. We jumped in the car. They took us where we wanted to go. They waited for us. So, you know, go out and get dinner, hang out with the team, security team and car waiting for you. You didn't need a security team. It wasn't like it was like dangerous by any means, but it was just nice having that, you know, somebody that can point you in the right direction or tell you where to go. Honestly, John, like, they rolled it out, man. And I'm telling you guys, we're going to be spending a lot more time in Saudi, especially Kenny. You're going to be out there a lot more. And they roll out the red carpet. The dinner that we had the night before the fight was the who's who of combat sports. Anywhere you looked or turned, you're like, holy shit, that's so-and-so, you know? It was unreal, man. Like, it honestly, God, it was a experience of a lifetime that, you know, I'm going to tell my grandkids about.
That's great. And I'm so glad it couldn't happen to a better guy. So I guess I'll just start with this. It's one thing for you or me or anybody to sort of bet on the athlete Francis Ngannou to get the job done in a championship setting in MMA or boxing. It's another thing to bet on that athlete to get the big money fight, because even though the PFL was there and big fights certainly are there for the now baddest man on the planet, Francis Ngannou, right? You guys all bet on him to get the Tyson Fury fight, right? And he got that fight. He maximized the showcase. But before we get into the fight, I guess I'm just curious, like, how confident were you that your athlete was going to get this particular fight?
It was one of the big three. That was always kind of where our head was at. It was Wilder, Joshua, or Tyson, or yep. Bus. Like, that really, like, there was matchup, like even Andy Ruiz's name came up, and Francis and I both agreed, like, that's kind of a bad matchup for us. You know, like, it didn't really make sense. Like, he's a dog. He's tough on the inside. He's got a great name, but it was like, that was more of a trap fight to us. Like, there was names that came up that were like, no, we want to stick with one of these big three. And if we can get one of those, then, you know, we can make some, generate some good money and make this a good boxing match. But obviously Tyson was the, you know, shooting for the stars, man. And we got it.
Erica, I'm curious to know what training looked like in preparation for this fight. You know, when was his knee ready to go? And then was it just boxing? Like, was he doing any MMA on the side in preparation for this? Is he getting pro boxers to come in and give him sparring? And I guess, you know, we see Mike Tyson, you know, played a little bit of a part there. You never know. Is this like a 10 minutes of him working with Mike? Was he along for the ride for camp? Is this a couple weeks with him? So I'm just curious about all those things. I know you played a major role.
Sure. We'll break it down. We'll start with the knee. We got back, I think it was, I want to say April, maybe if my memory serves me correct, we had to go in for a small procedure to get some scar tissue cleaned up. He was having some problems. Like, anytime he'd bend his knee, it was almost like the meniscus, how the meniscus would catch. So there were some issues there with some scar tissue. So he had a small procedure done, a little bit of rehab with that. And then he was kind of just, you know, back to normal, if you will. And actually that relieved a lot of the pressure on his knee.
And that was April, Eric, sorry?
Yeah, I believe it was April, if I remember correctly, Kenny, because I'm trying to think about the timeline and when we ended up getting the fight. But the way the camps kind of broke down, it was almost broke down into segments, if you will. So we knew we got the fight. We all met in July. So that was myself, Dewey, Markel, Randy, and Francis. We all sat down and we kind of went over what our overall complexion of what the game plan is going to look like, what we're going to do, what are our roles, essentially. You know, I know Francis had talked about hiring a boxing coach, bringing in somebody that, you know, ultimately we were all supportive of what he wanted to do, but we wanted to try to get this moving so you could build some continuity and camaraderie with whoever this coach may be. And then that's kind of like when I just felt the need to speak up, and I just said, dude, I think Dewey Cooper's the guy. You know, I think Dewey has the talent. I think Dewey has the coaching pedigree. He's coached boxers in the past. And not to mention, I just know Francis and his trust factor about surrounding himself with guys that he already knows and he already trusts, and the familiarity just made a lot more sense to me. And, you know, I know he kind of like, okay, well, I'll think about it, sort of thing. And then as time went on, you know, Dewey became more of that head coaching role for him in the boxing. And then he brought on John Mumba, who was from France, who he's also familiar with, who also was a very good boxer. But the nice thing about bringing on John was he fit the ideologies of what we were trying to accomplish as an MMA team moving over into boxing. So you saw a lot of our fingerprints on the style of fight that he had because of, you know, we wanted to carry over what we were doing really well in MMA that might be able to trick a conventional style boxer where we can kind of be unconventional in a style that maybe, you know, we can catch them off guard with some certain things. So that was a lot of our approach and our game plan, I think, when it came to our camp. So first segment of camp was really like, okay, we're gonna work on our cardio, building our base, doing these things, brushing up on fundamentals. Second part was the sparring. Then we brought in particular sparring partners that were, I wouldn't say like light work, but they're easier work for Francis to kind of implement the game plan to get moving a little bit better. Third phase was like, okay, now we got some really tough guys that are going to kind of fit the style of Tyson Fury. And then the last phase, man, was just like almost rounding out camp with we had this kid named Alex from the Ukraine who really, really gave an unbelievable look. I've been trying to convince the kid to come over to MMA, but he was flashy, Meryl. Like he moved a lot like Tyson, gave us an unbelievable look. And then the one thing I really loved that like Dewey really wanted to implement was like after every sparring, all we did was collar ties. We just added like 3 rounds of clinch work, man, because we knew that was going to be something that Tyson Fury was going to want to do, was going to try to rang heavy on us. And we're like, bro, this, we want this. We're welcoming this dude to go in the clinch with us because we're going to bang your ass up. And so as soon as I saw Tyson Fury, like I had to go back in the back and watch him wrap his hands. You know, I was the guy to go watch him wrap his hands. And I saw this dude's legs. I'm like, oh, this guy's built like Gru. Like we're gonna fuck this dude up in the clinch, bro. So I come back in the back to do it. I was like, bro, this guy, he's top heavy, man. He looks like the Miami Hurricane mascot. Like we're gonna fuck this dude up in the clinch. You know, we knew we would, but that was a lot of the game plan, man. Like so, you know, like in football, when you script your first 20 plays, those plays started to hit in the fight. So then we're like, okay, now we have avenues and how do we want to approach, you know, the game plan as it goes down the line. And man, it just, you know, started to unfold the way we wanted it.
I love it, man. That's brilliant. I'll let John jump in after this. I do have more questions though, but in leading up to this camp, you know, that left hook was pivotal. It seemed like he was looking for it before he got the knockdown. Was that something that you guys saw? Was that an adjustment that Francis Ngannou was making in real time? Where did that come from? Because ultimately, obviously, that was the best shot of the fight against Tyson Fury. Unbelievable.
A little bit of both, but I would say more from to Francis's credit, just his his situational awareness and his vision. You know, he's an unbelievable athlete that can see things on the fly. That is something that he did work on quite a bit. And there's something that we were trying to land off of the jab more over than coming over top of the cross. I call it a Bader hook for Ryan Bader when Bader dropped Fedor. So it's almost a crooked jab. And what we'll look for is when a guy throws his jab is where's his rear hand? Is his rear hand in his pocket? So if the rear hand's in the pocket, we'll kind of slip the jab and throw almost our own crooked jab over top of it with a different type of arc to it. So, you know, we did throw that a lot, but it wasn't off of the cross because Tyson threw the hook cross and Francis came over top of that. So that was more of a Russian style, a high elbow coming over top of the head that he throws very, very well as, on top of his, you know, the Bader hook. So it wasn't anything that we were like, oh, this is something we're going to find, but it was, we were countering a lot with that hook.
Extreme Couture's Eric Nixick back stateside after cornering Francis Ngannou in Saudi Arabia with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. Very gracious with your time. So didn't catch a ton of the corner audio. I'm curious what your mentality or thought process was after round 8 going into rounds 9 and 10 when seemingly the fight was there for the taking. I mean, are you allowing yourself to even be excited in the moment that you might pull off the improbable? Many people thought you did.
On the inside, man, I was freaking out. You know, like, we got this motherfucker.
We all were.
This motherfucker. And on the exterior, I'm like, all right, man, like just another Saturday here. I'm going to beat Tyson Fury. I was doing myself were on the camp of we needed a little bit more volume. You know, I watch enough boxing to know I feel like Tyson Fury is edging these rounds out with activity. And what these boxing judges might be looking for comparative to what our trained eye looks for in MMA, because we're landing the damage, in my opinion. The more impactful shots are coming from our guy. But how are they scoring that if we're getting jabbed up, 15, 20 times? If you're Sal D'Amato, we're winning this fight,
Right.
We got old Sal in our corner or judging. So that was the one thing I think that Dewey and I were heavy on going into round 8, 9, and 10 was, hey man, you're in really good shape. I think that was where Francis was maybe a little nervous, was how his cardio would hold up, and it held up great. So we're like, hey man, let's not leave anything left in our gas tank. Let's go. And by round 10, John, like, he jumped off the stool. Like, we got him hyped going into 10.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to go get this motherfucker. Like, he was hyped and he jumped off the stool and he was bouncing. And, we pulled the chair back. And I looked back at dude. I'm like, bro, he's going to unleash hell on this guy around 10. You know? So it was good, man. Like, I think for us as coaches, it's definitely a learning curve as far as like the judging goes and what we can do better. But all in all, I mean, it's a learning experience for us, and we're going to come back from that and become better.
Kenny, my only final question on the fight, and then you can jump back in here before we spin it forward, is, I guess, just in terms of Tyson Fury's performance and preparation, how did that compare relative to your expectations? Perhaps you can't quantify his preparation, but to my amateur eye, he seemed prepared. He seemed to welcome and take this challenge seriously, and still barely had enough to beat Francis.
Yeah, I think when you go into it, it's like, Kenny will tell you there's guys that will hop on the mat and spar that maybe have far less experience than anybody in the room, but they're erratic and punches come from weird angles and you're just not really too sure. And you just go to, we call them boogers, you just go to like, all right, I'm just going to work off my jab and kind of see what this guy has. And you get hit with weird stuff. So I really felt like that was his approach in round one. And I said that to Francis going into round two was, Tyson never really jabbed Francis's face. If you go back and watch, he jabbed his rear hand, and that's to occupy the powers, to keep his hand busy, And so, okay, we'll make adjustments off of that. So in my mind, it's like, okay, Tyson doesn't really want to engage yet. He wants to see what this guy's capable of, and let's make some adjustments off of it and see if we can catch him in that time frame. John Fury and Tyson told me right after the fight, man, it was the hardest camp they ever had because they just didn't know how to prepare. There was no tape on Francis other than what you see in the UFC. And that's hard to kind of equate when you're taking one and trying to apply it into a whole nother field.
Eric, like, how are you guys viewing this fight, right? Obviously it was a tremendous performance against Tyson Fury. And, obviously a lot of people thought he won that fight. Is this something you guys feel you can build off and go into boxing? And I guess, what is steering Francis at this stage of the game? Is he still wanting to get into MMA? Is he now kind of have this new toy he's got some success here that he wants to kind of play with? What's his mindset like right now?
That's a good question, Kenny. And like my one-on-one conversations with Francis have been, he definitely is in love with MMA and the growth and the nuances of what he's building off of. And, to be quite honest with you, bro, we're just really scratching the surface with what we can do athletically with him within MMA. I mean, you saw what we did in Ciryl Gane fight, it was still very sloppy. There were still a lot of things that we could have done better. And he knows that, and he thinks he can grow off of that. And then, it's a sport that I think he still really loves. And when he got back from the knee injury, we got back into training, and we were training for MMA because we didn't know what we were going to do with the UFC and that contract still. And he said something to me, man. He's like, dude, I'm so glad I have this love for for MMA still. And because he wasn't sure either, like, he came back with that knee injury, like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he came back pretty quickly and got right back to work. And it was great to see him still kind of have that love. But, now when you're talking about it from a business perspective, it's like, dude, if you're going to be making $30-40 million to go box,
right?
It's like, I understand it if you decide to go and box two or three more times and then maybe possibly get back to MMA or nothing. I don't know. But from my talks to him with him, I know he still loves the sport of MMA. And I think that's ultimately what might drive him back, is just, the challenges that it gives him.
Ultimately, Francis is going to make that decision, but where do you want to see him fight next, in boxing or MMA?
I think it would just depend on the opportunity that's at hand. I would like to see what PFL comes up with as far as an opponent goes, and what they can say as far as like, okay, this is a challenge for us. or if it's like, you know, if this Anthony Joshua, if it's a rematch with Fury, or if it's Wilder in MMA, like, what do they come up with? And I think once we have some of those options, which now look at it like this, guys, we're on the A side. Like, we get to call our shots now.
Oh, yeah. You know?
So let's lay all of our options and see which serves us the best, and let's go from there.
All right, so it's not going to be mixed martial arts. It's going to be boxing. Okay, let's cut to the chase here. So when Francis Ngannou signed with the PFL, for me, obviously, it was bittersweet, right? Because my best friend, Kenny Florian, is their lead analyst. So I'm happy that Ken Flo was going to call his next MMA fight. But I bemoan the fact that we weren't going to see him in mixed martial arts until May of 2024 at the absolute earliest. That is absolutely back burner stuff right now. And I'm not saying that because the UFC cuts my paycheck. Now, the appetite for me and 95% of combat sports fans is to see Francis Ngannou box Deontay Wilder. No, I mean, in a rematch with Tyson Fury, but the dream fight for me right now, 100% is Deontay Wilder and Francis Ngannou in a boxing setting. I think you have the foundation for an immediate rematch, but it seems as though maybe that is not going to happen. So what is the dream opposition for you in a boxing setting? Because we all know which way this is going.
Yeah, in a boxing setting, I would say, you know, Joshua or Wilder, 100%, you know. And I think I love, you know, I just love Eddie Hearn just poking the bear, you know, talking Joshua's going to get us out in three rounds. That was our number one choice when, you know, we thought about a dude who we can starch in the first round or first or second round was Anthony right. Joshua, you know, like, so yeah, we're all about that. If those guys want to do it. Yeah. And then, you know, I heard Wilder's working on his MMA. So
yeah, that's you know, intriguing. On the MMA side.
But he does not want that.
No. Well, and I also think in terms of Francis's still appetitive nature for MMA, one thing that would make you love MMA is when you knock down Tyson Fury and hurt him, and the rules of that particular sport force you to back up, right? You know, so yeah. I would think that he wants to unleash and unload. And, you know, as I've said to you privately and of course publicly, you know, Francis Ngannou is the most devastating power puncher that I have ever seen in the UFC. Just a skosh ahead of the late, great Anthony Rumble Johnson, and just a really good dude, right? In all of our interactions, I'm just so happy for you guys. I want to be respectful of your time. Kenny, if you have anything on the back end, fine. Last thing I will say, in terms of you and your career, obviously it has been a huge 18 to 24 months, but I think like a lot of us, at some point we say to our significant other, hey, you know, I want to try to do this, and, you know, we may not make money. And certainly Kenny and I can relate as far as the podcast is concerned. For me, it was Bellator season one in 2009. I don't know for you if it was maybe becoming the main man at Extreme Couture, if that was the moment that for you and your wife, she was like, oh my God, man. Or if it's been like signature big moments ever since, but I'm curious, when was like the moment where Annie, your wife, was like, holy shit, man, like, you fucking let up yourself and you did it?
You know, it was funny because she doesn't really remember this conversation, but like, you know, I was still bartending, I was still like kind of learning and coaching and traveling at a, you know, just whenever I could to help out with some of the guys. And you know, she just checked me one day, and it was like, you know, I'm just not happy with like your commitment towards, I just felt like I was spread so thin and just doing things kind of half-assed, you know, and sometimes like you have to hear those things from people that you love, and it hurts the most, right? Like it hurts you on the front end the most, but it's what you actually really need to hear, because it motivates the hell out of you. And you have one or two choices. You can curl up and die, or you can go and flourish. Right.
Right.
And that conversation she had with me really, man, like at first, you know, it hurts your ego and then, but you realize that this is exactly what you needed. And then for me, I think all in the progressions, COVID really helped me. Like, with COVID, I felt like it challenged me in a way of gratitude in a time where, you know, everybody was hurting, everybody was on the same playing field, and COVID became about perspective and what do I have? What can I do? And how can I flourish in a time where I think people are going to let their guard down? And, you know, I had a key to the gym. I had access to my athletes. I had Francis Ngannou and, you know, a handful of guys, Dan Ige, Brad Tavares. And I said, look, guys, we're going to keep the secret, super secret training sessions. I called the dev group, Team Six, SEAL Team Six guys. We're going to go and work, and we're going to go and get better in a time where I think people are going to be letting their guard down, and we can not only catch up, but I think we could lap some people and become better. And by doing so, it really helped me become a better coach. It helped me become a better father and a husband. But I definitely attribute to that time during COVID where I felt like it really helped me become the guy that I am today.
Yeah. Amazing foundation that you have set, my brother. We appreciate the time so much. Congratulations. We can't wait to see all that your future holds, of course, in the corners of Ngannou and Strickland and Ige and everybody else on Instagram and Twitter. I guess they call it X now. It is Eric with a C underscore XCMMA. My man, rest the voice, right? Like the voice is probably getting as tired at this point, I would say, as the hands. But we appreciate you carving out a quarter of an hour for us, my brother.
Anytime. Kenny, what did you think about the Southpaw? I had to ask you, bro.
It was awesome, dude. I you guys did a lot of things I did not expect. More than anything else, I think just the patience. I think that's what Fury, I don't think, was ready for. Is at no point were you guys really throwing yourselves out of position. It was really just methodical, well thought out, and just congratulations, man. It's been amazing to see you work and what you've been doing with all your fighters. Amazing. Congrats.
Thanks, brother. Yeah. Chris Algieri was a huge help for me this camp. Like, I don't know. I don't want to throw him under the bus because I know he works for Top Rank. I called him, a great friend of mine. I know Chris for years. And, he was from a kickboxing background. He dabbled in MMA, but I thought he was a very accomplished boxer. So he was a great resource for me in the beginning of laying out kind of a game plan. And hey, man, what are your thoughts on if we started doing things out of southpaw and try to hit our step overs and change our stances? Because I know a lot of, conventional boxers, especially the heavyweight division, don't do that, And what do we do already really well in MMA and some of our growth that we've seen with Francis? I felt like we had an option there that I think that was kind of something that maybe they didn't see us being able to do. But man, Chris was a great resource for me in the beginning stages of that camp. Just kind of put that stuff together. It was cool.
That's amazing. Well, he'll appreciate the shout to be sure. And grateful for your time, my man. Get back to it, the family in the gym. And we will see you on the road shortly. Thank you so much.
All right, guys. I'll see you guys soon. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
Thank you, brother. There he is, the great Eric Nixick with us here on the Anik and Florian podcast. What a moment. What a time to be alive if you are one Francis Ngannou from Bati, Cameroon, where the average citizen takes in $1,300 a year. Major motion picture truly doesn't even begin to describe it. I don't know why the movie hasn't been made, perhaps because they were waiting prophetically for the story to be written the way it has been written, which is just so amazing. The collar ties, right? You got to love it because I played itself out, right? I mean, you think how many heavyweights are going to be able to physically annoy Fury in that type of setting where normally he would have the upper hand?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's kind of like me wrestling a bunch of jiu-jitsu guys and thinking like I'm the man, when it comes to wrestling, and then actually going against an actual wrestler and going,
yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I actually stuck. And Fury, I mean, that's how I think I saw it, like with Fury, who was able to kind of bully guys in that clinch and move them around. And then you lock up with someone like Francis Ngannou,
dude.
And you just feel like you're in a completely different world. And I truly believe that was one of the reasons why he was out of shape. For people who are saying, he probably didn't take it seriously, I don't believe any of
that.
I really believe he put his best foot forward on that. But I think exchanging the clinch, moving or trying to move around someone like Francis Ngannou and, the tricks that you had before against all the other boxers aren't working. And you're stressed emotionally, you're stressed physically. Right. Amazing.
Well, and if you fast forward, say, 12 or 18 months even, I don't know how old Tyson Fury is, right? But deadlift and squat and try to get yourself in the best possible physical shape of your life. I don't know if he was in that. And I don't know if it'll be Anthony Joshua or Deontay Wilder or who it's going to be, but I'm just very excited to see Francis Ngannou in a big-time boxing setting again. It's going to be wild.
And it's also not fair standing next to Francis Ngannou. Like no matter what kind of shape you're in, you're never going to look that great just because Francis looks like he's carved out of marble.
Yeah,
man. It's what an experience, man. Unbelievable. And Eric and everything he's done, man. He just has a very thoughtful way of approaching things. He's extremely humble. He'll reach out to other people for help and advice and, just a great leader, a great coach, a great leader, and really excited for him because every exchange, every interaction I've had with him has always been a very, very positive one. So I'm very happy for him and his team.
Brian Stan often talks about what makes great leaders and that bosses aren't necessarily leaders just because someone's a right. CEO or a fucking chairman doesn't make them actually a good leader. And Eric Nixick is certainly that. And I love sort of some of the football terminology and how analogous those two sports are for him. If you don't know, if you're perhaps one of our international listeners, oftentimes in professional football, to be sure, they will script the first 15 offensive plays. And as you heard him say, top 20 plays or first 20 plays. And a lot of those plays in the fight start to hit and you get excited in that corner. Francis Ngannou 37, Tyson Fury 35. So we will see how it plays out from here. But it's pretty cool to think about a guy like Eric Nixick, right? Betting on himself as an MMA coach, becoming the man at Extreme Couture. And then you have this athlete, Francis Ngannou, and he becomes the undisputed UFC heavyweight champion. And then there's the potential opportunity for some of these riches. And now you talk about potentially $35 to $40 million to box Anthony Joshua or Deontay Wilder because of what he accomplished in defeat against Tyson Fury. And, you know, maybe Eric Nixick gets 1% of that. I don't know. But his son, Knox, is basically a fucking godson to Francis Ngannou. So I'm sure he's doing just fine.
Yeah, unbelievable, man. You know, one thing I kind of wanted to ask him, and I don't mean it in a disrespectful way, and perhaps you can kind of chime in with your opinion on this. And Francis is certainly not someone who is going to rest on his laurels, right? He's in the position he's in because he has made a lot of or taken risks over the course of his life and career. But I wonder how much there is to gain besides monetary gain, right? That is clear. He's going to make a heck of a lot of money boxing. But I wonder if he stopped boxing today and stayed with MMA, and I wonder how much like mystique is going to surround Francis Ngannou as the guy who was this MMA guy. He had one fight against the champion of the world in Tyson Fury. He was undefeated and he almost beat that guy. And he went back to just smashing people in MMA. Of how much more intrigue and excitement would be kind of revolve around his name as opposed to if he goes into boxing. And now, again, it is out of his realm. Now people are taking him seriously. They're preparing for him. They have some tape. And maybe he goes 0-2, 0-3 potentially, but has a bunch of money in his bank account. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think?
It's a lot to think about. It's a lot to think about. Certainly in terms of his bank account, it's going to have more numbers than he ever imagined, right? But I just think selectively right now, those boxing paydays seemingly are three times. I mean, he can make $10 million to show in the PFL. I just think that money leads the dance here, unfortunately, right? Yeah. And or, well, for better or for worse, I should say, because I do want to see him in an MMA setting at least once more. Like, is that greedy, right? Like, there are no guarantees at this point that we see John Jones at least once more in an MMA setting. I am hopeful. But I do hope we see Francis Ngannou at least once more. And you're certainly right in terms of the major motion picture and the mystique. Were he to now go back to MMA and start smashing fools inside of a round like he was before, it would be really intriguing. And I think it would leave people with a huge appetite to see him go box again. But either way, it is Francis Ngannou's world. We're just kind of living in it at this point in time. All right. So before we bounce on out of here, just want to thank everybody for supporting all of the new merchandise efforts at johnanik.com. 20% off through the end of the month of November. No, I think through like November 14th, Zach Candido's 40th birthday. I think through November 14th, 20% off all new designs at johnanik.com. And we thank you guys, right? We're investing in the show. We're twice a week. We're very excited about what the future holds. And because I won't be able to do this when my brand new studio is up and running, I think I'm going to do it today on the way out. So I'd like to thank MediaZone Mike Jones for setting up this studio. We're not quite there yet, but as you can see, well, maybe I can just get out of the shot, right? Or just in the fucking shot. That's not going to work. But you know what, Ken Flo? We're working on a lot of different things. We have a lot of different cameras here, and we're very excited about what the future holds. You may see Khabib Nurmagomedov's face in the background there. But my favorite part, of course, is that I can just say, Alexa, turn the studio on.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt-sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
Work. Alexa, turn on studio.
There it is.
There it is. So the lights go on, the cameras go on. Wicked exciting stuff because awesome. I'm so technologically uninclined. Alexa, turn off the fucking studio.
She did it immediately. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? You know, you curse, yeah. She does it the first time. All right. So we're very excited to bring all of that to you, different angles, and very excited about all that the future holds. But thanks to everybody for supporting the show. Thanks to our producer, Cody Merrow. Thanks to Eric Nixick for hopping on today. We are right back with you this Sunday in advance of UFC 295. Perhaps that episode will drop on Monday. Don't want to put any undue pressure on Cody and our DraftKings staff. But we are taping on Sunday as we get ready for UFC 295. We will be joined by Matt the Steamroller Frivola. We did reach out to Benoit Saint-Denis, but as many of you know, that man is on a seek and destroy mission, so he respectfully declined. Gonna come on after the fight if he gets through Matt the Steamroller Frivola. But Cody tells me it will be out on Sunday, and we will be joined by Matt the Steamroller Frivola. So with that, thank you all for checking back in with us this week. Don't forget to like the show, subscribe on DraftKings, because I guess that helps the show as well and helps us. And we will talk to you guys in a few days. With that, for Ken Flom, John Anik, thank you for watching, for listening. Until Sunday night, you're lit.
Every time I start a verse, I break at least three commandments. Kinda like Pluto, because I never plan it. I'm outlandish in the way that make Apaches look like they own ranches. It's the art of war, your blood's the only color on the canvas. And I don't mean it like a thug sense of how you can get God. Fuck being gangsta, I'm hip-hop. You got it, every time you walk in the label, the A&R's like not it. Immune to your shit, cause I circle, dot, dotted. Body heat is a toxic, we gotta beat, I don't gotta speak. Competency start to think psychically, make the speakers speak elitistly. Off their high horse, make an ass of their views. Your DJ must not know the alphabet, forgetting his cues. My favorite DJ got those and six extra L's to abuse. Esoteric John P, and I'm the new kid at school. I'm Radar Ellis, nice to meet you. Short bustin' my styles. Egocentric, ego tripping with frequent fly smiles.
DJ wants to get in the bird, he gets in the bird. And Bird takes the shot.
You wanna send it on us? We got commandos on us. We rep some
better. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.